The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Now your host, Roger Waldron.
Today my guests on Off the Shelf are Jennifer Walcott and Bill Beyer. They are principals at Deloitte Consulting, and they focus a lot of their practice on shared services in the federal space, opportunities to leverage government resources, achieve economies of scale to save, you know, customer agencies money as well as the taxpayer. Jennifer and Bill, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Roger.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to this conversation as someone who worked for a shared services platform, the General Services Administration. There's a great opportunity there to achieve efficiencies and savings for all of government. And so when we focus on this conversation, I think the first thing to talk about is what is shared services in the federal space? What do those two words really mean? So Jennifer, why don't you take a shot at that?
Sure. Well, it takes a couple of different forms in the federal government. And so we talk about it primarily as a means to find economy of scale and deliver better value to the customer and ultimately to the taxpayer in support of mission execution. And so a couple of different forms that we've seen it take in the federal space today are, one, really looking at functions that are candidates where economy of scale makes sense and delivers value back to the taxpayer. And so primarily in back office functions. And we see that happen both through what we call intra-agency. So an agency saying, I found economy of scale within my own walls. I can build something centrally here and take advantage of that. Or also through a divestiture, where an agency can consider actually outsourcing a function to another federal agency that already has a model put in place where they can execute that function maybe better than the other agency was able to do themselves. And through that, again, they're able to maybe realize cost savings. They're able to deliver better value back to the mission ultimately. And so in theory, it's a model where you're able to find savings and also value at the same time. And just one other quick point, we also talk about it in the context of service delivery. And the reason that we use service delivery and shared services at the same time is to make the point that not everything is a candidate for shared services. It's about finding a model and building a model that really works for that agency. And sometimes that means that pieces of these functions really are better left decentralized. And some of them are left, you know, are better served being centrally managed. So it's really a thoughtful and deliberate consideration of what's the right model for each agency.
Well, Bill, GSA has been around for a long time, 1949, I think, Property Act. But just generally, you know, the government's, you know, made attempts and focused energy on shared services, and then it ebbs, you know, and the old ebb and flow, the pendulum swings. Can you sort of talk about and take us through where we have been with regard to shared services and leading up to where the current state of play is?
Well, first of all, like you said, ebbs and flows, successes and failures. So let me just focus on one success, or what most people look at as sort of the bellwether moment for shared services. About 12 years ago, there were about 22 to 23 payroll systems across the government. And under the Bush administration, they had made a concerted effort to bring that number down to about four. And in fact, now we have about 4 to 5 payroll systems. And it's estimated that the government actually saved about $10 billion worth of taxpayer money by consolidating those particular payroll systems down to the four. But it took leadership. It took a lot of effort. And since that time, there have been attempts to do different types of things in shared services, mostly the administrative functions, financial management, human resource management, acquisitions, travel, IT. And now with the emergence of cyber, the opportunity to do continuous monitoring and other emerging kind of shared services. So the state of shared services today has definitely taken a turn. And under this administration and through OMB, they established what's known as the USSM organization under GSA, Unified Shared Service Management. And the function of that particular organization, which Dave Mader announced about a month and a half ago, is to take these organic federal shared service providers, which there are about 5 in the civilian market at this point, and start to manage them. And then also manage the agencies, the other agencies that have these administrative functions, on how they would actually migrate those functions into these federal shared service providers, or actually go to the commercial shared service providers. So USSM has a very, very large charter at this point. There's a lot of inhibitors to actually realizing the vision. And at this particular moment, they're in the halo effect of actually creating change in the government.
Have they identified the particular candidates that the platform? You mentioned acquisitions and HR. Is this organization now, actually picking, targets and then already reaching out to agencies about this? Where are they? I know it's a month and a half. To your point, though, the halo, it's one of those things like right now is the time to get something done because it's just been blessed by the administration, and that's when you have the energy and the momentum behind
it. There is definitely a sense of urgency, and they are focusing right now initially on financial management, HR, travel, IT, and acquisition. And they are looking for others like grants, maybe an emerging shared service, as well as cyber. As you mentioned, there is a sense of urgency with this administration anyway because of the 14 months left.
Right, yeah.
This USSM organization would like to put in some anchors to actually bridge the administration and continue down this path of shared services. Ultimately, it's a compelling platform, right? In the time of austerity, in the time of budget deficits, this makes sense. Having a career inside of Treasury or DOL or any of these agencies as a financial management expert doesn't serve you from a long-term perspective. Having a shared service organization that actually focuses on financial management government-wide gives you a much more enhanced career path. So there are a lot of compelling platforms of why this is actually important today.
Right.
Jennifer?
Yeah, so just one other thing I wanted to mention about where USSM is focused that I think is really important is not just, so we've talked a lot about sort of philosophically and conceptually the benefits of shared services, but how to actually get it done successfully is really, really important. These are highly complicated transitions. They're things that require significant investment. And so that's the other place that USSM is really focused, I think, is on how to enable success at the end of the day. And whether that comes through the sharing of best practices and the leading practices that we've learned through doing this a couple of times across government, how do you take those and really, use that as a force multiplier to make other agencies successful with this journey? And on the investment point, there's been a lot of conversation in the last 18 months in particular, around how do you actually get investment directed at these things? How do you provide investment both for the shared service providers that really need it to be world-class providers? And how do you support the agencies going through a transition in really tight budget climates such that you can invest enough?
Okay, so a follow-up question in terms of, quote, implementation of this organization. It's housed in GSA with OMB support. Are they in the process of putting the folks together? Is it a part of the Office of Government-Wide Policy? Can you shed a little light on that for the listeners?
Sure, yeah. Office of Government-Wide Policy. And they are in the storming, norming, conforming phase right now.
Okay. Yeah.
They're standing it up. It's under the leadership of Beth Angerman. And Beth came over from OFIT, from Treasury.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really grappling with, what's the move forward? How do we get these cats herded? And exactly to Jennifer's point, how do we get the kind of capital investment to actually upgrade some of these systems? How do we look at the processes across government? How do we standardize those processes? How do we standardize the systems? Because, one agency may want a blue button, another agency may want a green button, but it does the exact same thing from an outcome standpoint. And so ultimately, financial transactions are financial transactions. HR transactions are HR transactions. Acquisition, same process.
Right.
Yep. The issue is we all want it to be a little bit different, or we think that some things are just innately different to that particular agency. Beth and GSA at this point are really grappling with how do we create sort of gold standards? And is that the lowest common denominator, or is that something that's world class? And then where do we get the investment to make that stuff happen?
So GSA and OMB, are they also pulling in folks from across the government to participate in this group, or in, sort of councils supporting the group?
They are. So they're serving a bit as a convening function as well, I would say, through sort of two different platforms, bringing both the provider community together, as well as what I would call the customer or the buyer side of the community, and people that have, as stakeholders, a vested interest in the success and the long-term policy decisions, I'll call it, around governing shared services. And the other part that's really interesting is they're convening people across functional lines. So historically, you've seen a lot of things happen in what I would characterize as functional silos. There's a financial management policy and strategy there. There's an HR policy and strategy there, governed by, you know, separate entities within the federal government. This function now convenes some of that together and starts to look at a model where, you know, relative to what we've seen in commercial, is more related to that.
So it's integrated.
It's much more integrated and conversation that says, if there's an issue we need to solve around investment, let's talk about it both in the context of HR and finance at the same time. There could be a solution here that works, you know, across multiple functions. And so I think that's the other part that really is important for the federal government going forward as well.
Well, that's sort of, to me, like when I hear you say that, that sort of, you know, IT systems now have to be much more integrated, right?
Sure.
Across a business line or across
Absolutely.
An agency and sort of organizationally reflecting what's going on in, you know, the IT space. They mirror each other. Right.
Yeah. Okay. And those functions end to end relate to each other. Payroll, for example, is a function where you have an HR activity happening and you also have a finance activity happening.
And Jennifer, right now we have an ad break activity happening. So we do have to take our first break. My guests today are Jennifer Walcott and Bill Beyer. They are principals at Deloitte and we're talking shared services. When we come back, I will ask Jennifer and Bill a bit about some best practices for implementation, as Jennifer put it, enabling success in shared services. You are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today my guests are Jennifer J. Walcott and Bill Beyer. They are principals at Deloitte Consulting and they focus much of their practice on shared services opportunities in the federal space. And, you know, when we took the break, I teased the idea of talking about best practices. And I think maybe first, guys, we can talk a little bit about the government is a very parochial place. And there are many inhibitors to taking advantage of economies in scale and shared services models. So maybe we should talk about some of the inhibitors and challenges in the space and then transition to some of the best practices. So Jennifer, Bill, who wants to go first?
I can kick it off with the USSM organization because that's where we just left off. Again, going back to the halo effect, 6 months, what's the impact? What are you going to do? If you're just setting up a governance structure where you get a bunch of people to convene and they're going to be talking about nice things, you're not going to bridge and actually have an impact inside the marketplace of federal government. Truthfully, our take on it is that you do need to consolidate some of these federal shared service providers. You need to create a standard, a blue ribbon standard for some of the systems and processes. An opportunity to use data analytics to actually drive metrics into the organization and actually determine, you know, what is your scorecard? How are you doing in terms of providing services and efficiencies in the government? And are you actually saving the taxpayer money? You may not in the initial because, like Jennifer said, migrating agencies have to spend money in order to set up those systems and processes and functionality to make sure that they can migrate to the shared service provider. Shared service provider needs to have that catcher's mitt to be able to accept it. And truthfully, USSM needs to drive migrating agencies to outcomes versus requirements. Government typically, when they buy a system or they start to do any project, they start to look at requirements gathering. And the truth is, this isn't about that. An HR action is an outcome. It doesn't matter setting up the requirements of that. You actually want the outcome. Did you hire someone?
In a timely manner.
In right, a timely manner. Excellent.
Trust me, I was a manager, and the hardest thing to do is to hire anybody, frankly.
100%. And so that's the point, is that there's got to be a fundamental shift, paradigm shift, brain shift, however you want to call it, to outcome-based results versus creating functional requirements that require big capital investment. So USSM has their hands full, and Beth and company really do need to take a look at this and then drive it and have some tangible results early on.
Right.
Jennifer?
Just to complement sort of what Bill said on I'll call it a more tactical level, thinking about the actual transitions and how do you make those successful and what are inhibitors that agencies are facing as they sort of cross that path. I think a couple of things. One is ultimately, this conversation should still be very much about the agency's mission. So at the end of the day, having support from a broad scope of leaders within the business is really important. And that includes not just your back office, your typical CIO and CFO and Chico, but also really thinking about how does this impact mission and getting the other sort of mission-focused leaders in the agency, you know, thinking about this transition, engaged in the transition and the conversation and participating, so that the solution ultimately is driving towards mission outcome. And whether that means it's more, you know, financially viable for them such that more funding can go back to the mission, whether it means the outcomes can be driven in a better way that means I'm hiring people faster in places that I really need it to accomplish the mission, all of that is a really critical part of the conversation. And you see a diversity of the way that happens in agencies depending on the leadership structure and sort of how agencies have chosen to go about this.
Sure. And it is a view because shared services should be a utility for the mission. Just a quick example. I mean, the warfighter should not have to worry that their paycheck to their family is going to be delivered in a timely fashion, so that should not be the first on his or her mind.
Right.
It's a utility. And that's how shared services needs to be perceived.
Not, right. You turn on the lights, the lights
you turn on the lights, right. The lights are on. Yeah. You turn on your phone, the phone service works. So this fundamental shift to the outcome-based is going to be transcending for a lot of thought because the government typically has created careers around requirements and sort of this support function.
Sure. Mm-hmm. One of the big issues, I mentioned parochial, is a question of losing control. A manager feeling like, or leadership at an agency feeling like they're losing control of a certain function, and what does that mean for them? Is that one of the big challenges that you guys see?
Absolutely. I would say that's a very common concern, and it's a very legitimate and reasonable concern as well. It's something that, you know, agencies in particular, if you've had responsibility and accountability for your HR function, you feel you've got control over it. Suddenly divesting that to somebody else causes concern. And it's a little bit back to what Bill said, is the outcome based. Can I really rely on someone that I don't have direct authority over to produce the results that I need and the time frame that I need them at the quality that I need them? So I think a little bit, some of this also goes back to the way in which the transition happens, is do you invest the right talent and the right resources in the transition and in the process such that the outcome can be successful? And it's a really hard thing to do successfully if you don't invest in the right way in making the transition happen. So what happens as a result of, let's say, I don't have all the funding I need to make the transition successful, I do it, you know, with less money than I wish I had, with less resources than I wish I had. The outcome then doesn't achieve the result or deliver the value that you want. And so those two things in my mind are really, you know, intrinsically linked at the end of the day. And I think that's important for us to remember as well. If we want this to work, if we want the outcome to be there, if we want the buyers and the customers to feel comfortable with the results, you're going to have to invest the money in making the transition successful and to find the talent that you need to make that transition successful as well.
Okay. And ultimately, the government is flawed from a standpoint of incentives. From an individual level, when you just look personally, you are incented to have as many people work for you as possible. Therefore, fiefdoms are created. Not intentionally. I mean, this is an unintended consequence of organic growth. And consequently, now you're asking them to divest, not get rid of people, but to move people into different organizations. It creates some angst around the organization.
Right. And now let's talk a little bit more about, and Jennifer, you've touched on a little bit too, best practices. You talked about investment, making sure investment, you got buy-in. What, you know, give me your top three best practices for implementation.
So there, again, if you sort of listen to the conversation that's been happening in the last 18 months or so, we hear a lot about governance. We hear a lot about leadership engagement. We hear a lot about change management, all of which I think are absolutely necessary. We would all agree that you have to have those things in place. I think the other thing that's really important is what I would call a multidisciplinary and multifunctional team. So to make transitions like this happen, it's not just a technology project. It is not just project management skills that you need. It's not just technical depth around the function. All of those things need to come together in the right way to make the transition successful and the outcome successful. So I think thinking about that as you put together a team to go after this and to really execute this project in the government, thinking about it multifunctionally in terms of the disciplines that you need is really important. I think the second thing I would say is also partnership with your provider, or so when you, whoever the organization is to whom you're divesting the process or to whom you're going to share the process with, you need to plan together. And we've heard that a lot with experience, for example, with the Treasury migration that we just supported at HUD, Housing and Urban Development, who just transitioned their financial management function. One of the things they talked a lot about is we really need to plan together and spend more time planning. And that was really critical for them in their success.
Were there like service level agreements used in that case? Is that a tool that people are using?
Absolutely. It is. And so I think that's one of the things that as you start talking about back to Bill's conversation around requirements versus outcome, When you start talking about what you need from the provider, that's the baseline for the service level agreement at the end of the day. What's the outcome that you need? Not just the process that I'm going to execute for you, but what am I going to get as a result of that process? And so in theory, back to the planning, those conversations should begin early in the dialogue. And then that thread should be carried through and reflected, as you said, in a service level agreement that ultimately can be the foundation for what that partnership is going to be at the end of the day. And we do talk about it as a partnership because there are responsibilities on both sides. The provider has some responsibility, but typically in these business processes, also the customer has some responsibility to provide accurate data or to complete certain parts of the process. And so that service level agreement, you know, in my opinion, should reflect some of those shared priorities and shared accountabilities as well.
Well, we're already up on our break. That segment went really fast. My guests today are Jennifer J. Walcott and Bill Beyer. They are principals at Deloitte. We're talking shared services. And when we come back, we'll continue a little bit of the conversation of best practices. And then we're going to turn to a couple of reports that were issued on December 17th, 2015, focusing on acquisition shared services and HR shared services in particular that Deloitte and the Partnership for Public Service worked on together. Interesting reports, lots of great information in them. You are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guests are Jennifer J. Walcott and Bill Beyer. They are principals at Deloitte Consulting, and we're talking shared services, opportunities for savings, efficiencies, and value for customer agencies and the American people. And when we took the break, we're talking a little bit about some inhibitors, some best practices, and I wanted to talk about that a little bit more before we turn to a couple of reports that Deloitte worked on with the Partnership for Public Service. And I guess my first sort of question, Bill, is in the earlier segment, you mentioned the issue of sometimes this costs money more money in the beginning and that buy-in from leadership. How do you address that? Is that looking at, you know, our government, right, is a annually funded organization and trying to sort of tease out here's a long-term implementation and when that return on investment comes. Is that an area of struggle, and how do you address that?
It's a big area of struggle because we can typically, what happens is when big systems get installed and those type of things, you know, folks go on to a O&M type of contract and you know, operations and maintenance, and then it might click up the next year a little bit, 2%, might click up another 2%. Well, to actually move into a shared service environment for a migrating agency, they're actually doing a big lift and shift and possibly bleeding out their current system and then moving their entire process and system over to the shared service provider. That requires quite a bit of money, and it requires a lot of investment, both on a leadership standpoint and for the staff. And there's a big change management component. So when we look at these things and when we actually do business cases to actually determine whether or not a migration should take place, we're actually looking at it from a holistic standpoint over a 3 to 5 year payback. It's a big deal. However, without looking at it that way, you don't realize the efficiencies. And I mean, there are other pieces here, more efficient services. There's cost avoidance. There's other elements that go into the business case besides just, hey, how much is it going to cost me to make this migration happen?
Well, yeah, and one of the things you talked about was data and the integrity of data and improving that integrity of data. And that has a ripple effect across organizations when you're disciplined about it and you're going through a shared services model. Jennifer, can you talk a little about the data and the importance of integrity of data and standardizing?
Sure. So as Bill was saying, the business case, again, often involves things that are, you know, beyond just the cost savings conversation. And data integrity and data quality are one of those that we would aspire in terms of the value you would get out of a shared services transition. And a lot of that has to do with the consolidation, is that bringing data from different sources and different places who are managed by different entities within an agency suddenly gets consolidated. And a different set of controls and compliance can be wrapped around how that data is managed then. The other value that comes often is integration of that data with other sources. So is there an ability, if you have a financial management provider who also has an integrated procurement system, do you suddenly have better data because those two things are now integrated in a way that maybe historically they weren't integrated? And so there's value again from that integration that can come from a shared services migration too.
Well, yeah, and is that, you know, in particular, the personnel systems in federal government, that, you know, it seems to me that's an area where there's could be a lot of data integrity improvement. And I know one of the papers that you guys worked on with Partnership for Public Services on human resources, shared services, progress, lessons, and opportunities. Again, this report was issued on December 17th. Can you talk about, you know, some of the examples you saw there in terms of progress and lessons and opportunities?
Sure. The big opportunity here is to actually, as you start to consolidate and as you start to move into a shared service environment on human resource management, there are pieces of that process that could be outsourced to commercial vendors. There's also things that are uniquely and innately governmental. During the report and writing the report, we started to look at the life cycle of HR management and determining what could and couldn't stay inside the bucket or outside the bucket. Also, different components, as Jennifer mentioned, around data standards is the ability to use data analytics. So you can start to look at things like workforce planning, succession planning, time to hire, those type of metrics that you start to measure and your ability to then turn around and say, okay, what are the benchmarks? What are the benchmarks in commercial and what are the benchmarks that should be in government? Both of these reports actually highlight the fact that as we start to get data standards, we're going to be able to benchmark each agency. And in that, it starts to drive a different kind of conversation. And the management of those conversations is going to be different. And so you start to increase efficiencies. You start to increase effectiveness. You start to identify where there are areas of opportunity. The other piece that we talked about was cyber. Cyber is not only cyber unto itself, where we have folks that attack us and so on and so forth, but actually with the Data Integrity Act and some of the cyber legislation that's coming through, some of these systems are going to be required to actually embed safeguards. If you're in an agency, let's say HHS, or you're in DOL, and you actually have a financial management system, now you have to embed those kind of safeguards. But if you're in a shared service provider, you are actually sharing that cost across multiple agencies. So you're not just responsible for your system, but now you actually are sharing the cost.
In listening to what you described, Bill, I got in talking about the information and the integrity of the data. It sort of has a tactical impact and a strategic impact, right? And I'd like to hear your thoughts on tactical. It's really, I can hire quicker. I have more accurate information. I can post requirements or even promotions, whatever, you know. And from a strategic perspective, you can get a sense of where you need to go in the future. We have that data, but, you know, having that more effectively provided for decision makers and people who are setting a strategic direction, like where are we going next in the next 10 years, who we need to hire, those kind of things. Is that fair to say areas where this can help leverage and create better organizations?
Absolutely. And I would say that's a path that we've seen a lot of commercial organizations travel as well. So when many commercial organizations, for example, began shared services, it was primarily focused on labor arbitrage and cost savings. What they ultimately realized is the point that you just made, which is there's actually a lot more value out of this consolidation that we can drive back to the business. And a significant part of that came from saying we suddenly have access to and consolidated data around 90% of the back office functions of this business. And that tells us a great deal about what we need to do and how to sort of proactively manage versus just reactively manage. And how can these shared service providers now become providers of analytics and value that they can bring insights back to their customers through that data consolidation and through that analysis?
Well, this report on the human resources shared services has a couple different shared studies. And I know you looked at HUD and its transition. You also looked at the Department of Agriculture. Do you want to pick one of those and talk a little bit about what you saw and what you learned from those case studies?
Sure. So on the HR side, what I can talk about here is the USDA experience that we talk about in the report. And that really gets back to the point that we've just been highlighting, which is that data consolidation and what I would call standardization of processes as well. And so USDA took the opportunity to consolidate some of its HR functions and was able to realize from that consolidation and standardization a lot more value back to the business. So the ability to look at data, you know, cross-agency. And even within agencies, you know, again, there's a lot of diversity in how these processes are executed. Some of that is mission necessary. Different functions, different missions necessitate different things. But USDA was really able to get a lot more value out of not only payroll, but also HR processes by consolidating and centralizing, you know, a large portion of those functions.
And the fascinating thing about USDA was they actually started the centralization process out of Forest Service, which that's mm-hmm. not part of their mission, right? A National Finance Center, which is down in New Orleans, that's actually the payroll.
Right,
so,
yeah.
You know, you all of a sudden saw a department that was actually organically creating these two separate shared services. And how do you bring them together? Because they were different pieces of a life cycle. And so the USDA story is an interesting story. You know, I just wanted to harken back to a little bit what the shared service piece is around why people do it. And, you know, we did talk about, you know, we did a survey of 311 private entities as well as public entities. And initially cost savings was obviously the first thing out of the gates. But others were data integrity, the ability to have process efficiency, internal controls, support for growth and scale, service level agreements, you know, removal of distraction from core business or mission, as Jennifer said. Yeah. If I have to figure out how I'm going to hire someone to fulfill my mission and it's not efficient and it takes me a year to do it, by the way, that initiative's gone.
Right.
Talent acquisition is also another one. You know, if you don't have a career path because you don't see yourself being promoted through your agency in a, like in the HR function, you know, having a shared service environment where there's a much bigger scale doing it for the entire government, now you can actually be a recruiting expert.
Sure. And Bill, right now we have to take our last break. My guests today are Jennifer J. Walcott and Bill Beyer. They're principals at Deloitte Consulting. We're talking shared services. When we come back, I'm going to ask them one quick question. You know, where is the greater opportunity, intra-shared services or inter-shared services across a government enterprise? And then we're going to talk a little bit about the Acquisition Services Shared Services report that Deloitte did with a Partnership for Public Service. You are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guests are Jennifer J. Walcott and Bill Beyer. They're principals at Deloitte Consulting, and we're talking shared services. And, you know, Jennifer and Bill, I teed up the entry question for this segment, and it's really intra shared services opportunities, you know, within a department or agency to, you know, to leverage requirements or leverage functions versus inter across a federal enterprise and just the difference in the opportunities and challenges. So Jennifer, I'm going to let you take a shot at that.
Sure. So my thought is that they're not actually mutually exclusive. You can have both at one time, be part of that overall delivery model. And I talked about that a little bit earlier in terms of what does service delivery model mean relative to shared services. And so to me, those are two of your choices in terms of service delivery. There may be some functions that you really decide I need to keep them embedded in the agency, but rather than have them completely decentralized, I still want to consolidate, but I don't want to divest it outside of my walls. And so therefore you'd have something that really is an intra-agency service. It's inside the agency, but consolidated, and you're getting some value and economy of scale from that. And it could live in parallel with some other functions that we've actually chosen to divest to another federal provider. And so I think it goes back to the process of really looking at the nature of work and deciding based on, is it highly routine? Is it highly transactional? Do I have the capacity inside the agency or do I not? And making thoughtful choices about what's really the best, you know, model for the agency at the end of the day.
Right. Well, yeah, and I think about the GSA model. You know, we've got the, you know, it used to be three services, FSS, FDS, and PBS, and they really didn't leverage each other all that much for a long time. You know, and now there's Fed Acquisition Service and PBS, and there's more functionality, you know, that's been sort of centralized. But I think, you know, that just sort of struck me as there's great opportunities, I think, within departments as a threshold, then looking to enter.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
So, Bill, and I saved the best for last because it's really about acquisition. And people know I'm a geek on acquisition. But the Acquisition Shared Services report with Partnership for Public Service that Deloitte did, and with a subtitle, Progress Lessons and Opportunities. And so I wanted to give you an opportunity to start talking about this report. A lot of it's about category management and opportunities to leverage that reorganization to a certain, I use reorganization in quotes, but it's a new layer sort of thing. Can you talk a little bit about it?
Sure. I love acquisitions. so typically, I mean, the government in 2014 purchased approximately $420 billion worth of things and services. And many of them were just similar across agencies. A pencil's a pencil, a pencil. And, you know, a computer's a computer, a computer. So very similar purchases, but there was no real coordination or no collaboration across government for acquisitions of those type of services. Now, you get into a NOAA, you're buying a boat, yeah, unique requirements. But generally speaking, acquiring a boat is similar to acquiring a plane, which is similar to acquiring a system, which is similar to acquiring services. It's just the statement of work that you're creating. So acquisitions is ripe for shared services. The other piece around acquisitions is that we are losing a lot of acquisition professionals out of the government. There is a huge knowledge drain. So from the FAR and the ability to have fair and reasonable competition, starting to lose legacy knowledge in the government and good contract officers that have maturity, integrity, and the ability to really drive acquisitions, this is a big risk for the government. And so acquisitions at this point is probably, I would say, out of all of them, is probably the one with the highest sense of urgency. The government did a great job initially starting with this category management. What category management was doing is they were starting to bucket different buys or spends for the government, things like IT systems, things like professional services, those type of categories, and starting to measure what are the efficiencies across agencies. So how does Commerce stack up beside HHS for acquiring PCs? And so for the first time, we've been able to take a federal-wide view of how the purchasing and acquisitions are happening across the government with different metrics. Now, again, a lot of data integrity issues. However, this is the first time we've been able to do this. Now, this is the beginning. This is sort of kindergarten. The opportunity is actually to step it up, to actually look at these processes and say, okay, what are common? How do we move them, like typical closeout? How do we move that into a shared service environment? Or better yet, how do we implement technology? The interesting thing in government is that we are such a paper-based society that you know, you want to acquire something like a PC, you actually have to go to a catalog, print out the catalog, then you have to print out a form, fill out the form, bring the form to your contract officer, your acquisition lead, then get the approvals of your managers. This is all paper-based. Then they timestamp it, and then they turn around and they acquire the PC for you. At that point, there's a whole invoicing process. And the entire life cycle, people touch paper so often. Now, in our personal life, we're right around Christmas time. What do? We get on Amazon. And if you have Amazon Prime, you're golden. And ultimately...
So have you done your shopping yet?
I'm still doing it, and there's a lot to be done. And ultimately, you know, it's intuitive. You get on, it's self-help. You don't have to call the help desk and say, hey, by the way, how do I enter my credit card number? Or in the government realm, how do I order my P card number? Or better yet, am I pre-approved to purchase this particular rugged PC? So we have not done a good job of implementing different solutions like ServiceNow, Coupa. There's multiple as a service type of platforms to actually mirror what's going on in our lives. And the closer that we can get to what's intuitive, the better off we'll be and the more efficient we'll be. Now, the best part about that is the back end. Now we actually can see when a request was put in, who actually approved it, what was the approval line, when is the particular product or service going to be acquired, when is it going to show up on my door, you know, how do I go back and trace it, do I still have that computer, do I need to upgrade? All those kind of notifications can be done computer to computer, get the human error elements out, and have more efficient data to then start measuring.
Right. Measuring and making for future decisions or acquisition strategies, all that kind of stuff.
100%. And so what happens is in the government space right now in acquisitions, we are getting bogged down. We're getting bogged down with trying to create custom solutions. We're getting bogged down with old processes. We're not looking at new innovative ways to do things. And they're not new innovative ways. They're actually what we do in our personal life.
Yeah.
And the more we can start to mirror what we do in our personal life in our government space, the better off we'll be.
Right. You, when you're talking there, you reminded me there was a recent, it might have been last month, you know, in November, of there was a Wall Street Journal editorial where procurement was the editorial.
They talked about
high school students being able to get, you know, technology upgrades for their phones faster than government employees can, because it's just like you described, you know, being able to quickly do that and acquire that, and how something's broken there. So to me, there are opportunities here to fix that. Jennifer, do you have any thoughts on the category management and acquisition services? We've got about a minute left.
Just one other thing I would add that, again, it goes back to doing this in a way that really provides value back to the mission. And so, as Bill said, that data really becomes valuable to someone who wants to understand what their future needs are going to be. And when you talk about the budget forecast, the ability to plan and really understand what things cost, you really need to have good data. And so the ability to suddenly say, I now understand what I'm spending money on, what it's costing me to do that, and likely what I'm using and consuming will ultimately help the mission better understand what they're going to need in the future as well.
Go ahead, Bill.
There are just some other things that just come to mind. I mean, I love this topic, right? But like reverse auctions, right? We have eBay out there. We have other kinds of vehicles where we can actually put out bids. We don't utilize those things in the government space. And there's an opportunity to do some of those things with technology and put out multiple bids and have people come back in a timely fashion. And we can actually catalog what we actually got the cost savings on. Those are the type of technologies that are out there, easily accessible, that need to be done. And so, like I said, category management, good start, baseline. Now let's get busy.
Right. There's a lot left to do. I want to thank my guests today, Jennifer J. Walcott and Bill Beyer. They are principals at Dolit Consulting. And you've been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.